Hey Anna,
Hi, son. Good to
how
see
are
you
you?
again. Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
Cool. I like all the plants.
Yeah. Are you good to go?
Yeah, I'm good to go.
Perfect. Then let's start.
Yeah.
Welcome, son, back again. We've met recently on your podcast, and that's when I invited you to come to mine to let us know a little bit more about your story, because I know that you've had several transformations and ups and downs, and I love that you are so open about it. But first of all, let me start by introducing you. You are an entrepreneur, you're a storyteller, a podcaster. Is there anything you want to add?
I think that's good for now. I mean,
TEDx speaker comes to
yeah.
mind. Yeah. Yeah.
I
Okay, and you're the
guess my main job is like I own an agency.
Yes.
So, I don't know if you knew that. But yeah, I'm trying to transition from a agency owner to a teacher.
And that's exactly what I want to talk about with you, because I have become a full-time entrepreneur 2 years ago, and I know, yeah, I have my ups and downs, and I know from you that you have had them too, and you have much more experience and so much to share. So I'd love to talk about that. I remember in Night at Night Owl Nation, because you already founded the community Night Owl Nation. We'll get to that later. You told us a story about you and Gigi, that I think you've just quit your job, a corporate job, and you started your agency, and you kind of ran out of money. And yeah, you still felt like I can still do it. You still held on to your dream. So yeah, let's maybe start around that time. What made you quit a very well-paid job, as I understand, and go for this thing and found your own agency?
Yeah, actually, by the time I started my agency, I guess I kind of give you a short version. That was my third time actually doing it. So I've already went through like from like the caterpillar to butterfly. By then, that was like the third time, right? So the first time I was actually when I was like young, 22 or something like that. I quit my job to actually I didn't quit my job. I got laid off. But when I got laid off, I got like 6 months of severance. So, I started an agency with a friend. And what happened was at that time, that was during 9/11. Like, and we our office was in right next to Wall Street, like 3 blocks from World Trade Center, so like our office got trashed. But what happened was we started that, and it didn't go very long until like it didn't work because we ran out of money, and I had to go back to 9 to 5 job. But I think I was just young; I wasn't ready. And then I went to back to 9 to 5 job, I for like maybe 6 years. And then I quit my job. I think that's the story that I told you. I quit my job to actually start freelancing. And then I did that for a year, and then I ran out of money again. And I was about to go. I was literally like a week away from start looking for a job. And then I got a project. I got a pro I that whole year I only made like $4,000. So obviously I my rent was $2,000 a month. So just to give you a
I'm very familiar with these things. Like I've been going through it too. It's my second time I've quit my job to start being a full-time entrepreneur. So and I love that you already introduced the caterpillar to butterfly thing, because that's really what I'm after. So first you were forced into like changing, but yeah, were these jobs already in branding, storytelling, what you do now? Were these
No.
no? Oh, they
So that's another thing. Like my first, actually, that first job where I got laid off was it was like a digital agency. Actually, that's the job where I learned how to do almost everything. Like I learned Photoshop there. 'Cause before that I was kind of self-taught. And I like, you know, I was kind of still very newbie. And then when I went there, I like learned everything properly, right? And then that was around 2000. Like that was around like the first dot-com burst. I don't know if you remember, like 2001.
Yeah, we
like
had that the same.
Yeah. So that's when I got laid off. And then I tried to do my own thing. But I wasn't taking it seriously, right? Because I had all this money that I got from the severance pay and I was getting unemployment. So, you know, until I ran out of money there and I just got another job. And that second job, I worked in IT. So it was like completely different. I took the most boring job possible because I just needed some sort of a security in my life. But then here's the thing about boring jobs.
How boring was it? I was an auditor, so yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I say boring, I meant like, you know, most corporate job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where I get paid every 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get a holiday bonus, 401k, you know, health benefits. It's just
yeah.
And actually, during that time, what I realized, I didn't realize that when I was then at there, but those jobs kills your soul. And the reason why it kills your soul is because it's almost because it's too safe.
Yeah.
And the safer you get, I realized. So that's why you can't stay in the cocoon for too long, right?
Yeah.
Like,
that's a golden cage. That's where you're comfortable enough not to quit. But it kills your soul. So what was it in you that was like, well, I don't want to stay here any longer? Did you prepare for that move?
Yeah, no. So I wasn't even thinking about quitting. But during that time, what happened was I was at this job for 5 years. And in the fifth year, this company was, they're called Cablevision. And back, like now it's called AMC, AMC Network. So they're, you know, it's like the channel that does like The Walking Dead and all that. So, okay. And there's like a lot of filmmakers there, like wannabe filmmakers, like, you know, people that wants to go into production. And one of my friend there was shooting a short film. Mm-hmm. And he told me to, he asked me to be an extra in this short film. So I went there, but I kind of fell in love with the whole process. And immediately I went to sign up for like an evening filmmaking class. And I wanted to like become a filmmaker. And then that school was in New York Film Academy. And then out of nowhere, what happened was I was just so like obsessed with filmmaking that like I don't even know why, but I started looking for a job.
Mm-hmm.
And then
in filmmaking.
Yeah, actually, I don't really remember why I decided to just all of a sudden leave. But I knew that I wanted to be a filmmaker and I knew that I needed to make more money, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking for a new job as a web designer instead of like doing IT.
Mm-hmm.
And then New York Film Academy happened to be hiring. I'm like, oh, this is perfect. So I went there and then I went there for a year. And New York Film Academy is the job that I quit to start freelancing, actually.
Ah,
so okay. The story is I wanted to buy this camera that was like $10,000. And I quit that job to start freelancing. First of all, I started freelancing. I tried to freelance while I had a job, but it wasn't working because I wasn't making any money. But I quit that job to start freelancing so I can save up enough money to buy a camera. So that was a temporary thing I was going to make websites for.
Hmm.
But then that eventually ended up becoming my agency.
Oh, okay. That's funny. That's funny.
But there's a whole other story there too.
Yeah. Okay. So that was a gradual transformation, you could say. Yeah. And
what it was it was like a quick transformation and then that got me to this other place. And then there was another quick transformation, something like that. Yeah.
And okay. Now you said at some point, started your agency. How was that different from freelancing to you? What did it mean to you?
Okay, so let me tell you the story there.
Yeah.
So when I started freelancing and then I ran out of money,
Okay.
and that's when I ran out of money, I was gonna get a job, but then I got a project for $10,000. And then like literally a couple of weeks later, I got another project for 17,000, and then it just started taking off. But then I got this into this other problem where I was too busy and I was overwhelmed. And I'm like, oh, I need some help, right? But around that time, I reconnected with my old business partner from that first agency I started. And what had happened was, in that kind of 7, 8 years, he kept going with that agency. And now that agency had like 20 employees and like, you know. And I met up with him and he asked me to join him as a partner, right? And then we'll like just combine the clients so I don't have to like take care of any of the operation things that I can just work on some websites. So I did that for 2 years. But that's when I learned that because now I was getting paid again, a salary, right? And that's when I learned that, okay, like as soon as you start getting a paycheck, I heard this from somewhere. As soon as you start getting a paycheck, your brain turns off.
Why is
Like,
that?
'cause it's safe. You don't have to like when I'm working for myself and I know that I need to keep getting clients and things like that, you know, I'm always like, you know, I guess like I'm more creative. I don't know why. But as soon as you start getting a paycheck, you know, everything is safe, everything like it your brain turns off and your back's not against the wall anymore. For some reason, I got lazy. You know what I mean? But I was there for 2 years and we kind of I had a disagreement with my partner slash boss. And I ended up leaving that company. But when I left that company, some of the employees followed me. And when I did that, and then that's when I started actually my agency. You know?
Okay.
So I guess what I did, what happened was I learned little bit about how to run a business when I was in that agency, when you know when I was there for 2 years, and then I learned a little bit about how not to run a business also. And then I started my agency, and then first year, like Gigi and I, we saved up some money to have a wedding, like $50,000, and then we spent all of that in the first 3 months. And then we were broke again, and that was like the lowest time of my life where,
Oh, wow.
I mean, and not really like low mentally, but in terms of like security wise, we were sleeping in the office. We rented out our apartment on Airbnb so we can use that money to pay for our expenses. We were like literally, we would sleep in the office. In the morning, we would go to the gym so we can take a shower there. And we were like eating canned food, and we were basically living like homeless people.
That's exactly the story I had in mind, which was like a moment where you can decide, do I go back to the safe life or do I continue? I've kind of
Well,
yeah.
for me, that time was when I was freelancing, and I was thinking about getting a job, right? But
Okay.
then I think when I started an agency, for some, maybe because I've been through it a few times, for some reason, I wasn't scared.
Okay.
Even though it was the lowest point in terms of security, I wasn't scared and I was all in. It was actually kind of delusional because everybody around was telling us, like, you know, hey, why didn't you just go get a job? And I was like, no, this is gonna work out. And it did, like literally within a year, we went from being in debt to having $200,000 in the bank.
Wow, what a roller coaster. I love you for being so honest about it because one of the things that drive you, I understood, is that you want to correct some things that are in the online business scene, like the six-figure launch and all these promises or false promises. And I think it's very helpful to know that even you, who looks very successful now, had to go through such phases. Went broke twice, as far as I could count. So, I'm kind of like, I'm not broke broke, but I'm at a point where the money that I had saved to invest into my into starting my business, I'm like kind of at the end of that money, and I don't want to keep doing that. So it's very refreshing to hear it from other people. They've been there too. It sometimes it takes some time to get all these things in order. Okay, so let's go back to your lowest point. You're basically not, yeah, you don't have a home. You're basically homeless. But you kind of, it's still an investment, right? It was still an investment in what you believed you can do. Now, tell us what happened. What happened for it to work?
So at that time, what happened was, first of all, me and Gigi decide to like split our like, responsibilities. So I'm just gonna focus on clients, and Gigi was handling all the like money, the operations, and all of that. And I guess we're like we have to focus on instead of focusing on like trying to, you know, like build a brand and all of that, we had to actually focus on saving money first, so that we have some sort of a runway. Like somewhere in my heart, I knew that I needed some sort of a, at least like a 6 month runway, where if we have no money for, if we get zero new projects for 6 months, we can still survive. Because what was happening was, you know, we would get projects, and I can tell it's a red flag. Like, oh, this client's gonna be tough and blah, blah, blah. And I would just take it on because I was so desperate. And what would happen is that project turns out to be a drag. We actually lose money on the project. So in order to make up for that, I had to take on another project desperately again. And then we kept going down a spiral like that. So I knew that like I had to. So and I see a lot of entrepreneurs do this. They get into the spiral, and because of out of desperation and out of that, they keep digging the spiral. So what we had to do is we recognize that, and we had to dig ourselves out of that hole. And in order to do that, we literally just locked ourselves in the room and worked like 18 hours a day, every day, just nonstop. I didn't care about anything else but making money. And a year after that, you know, like I just looked at our bank account, and it was like $200,000, and I was like, whoa. Like, and Gigi was like a big help in that, right? Because she was very strict about collecting payments, not giving discounts and things like that. So yeah, that's pretty much how we got out of it. And once we were there, now I didn't have to go into a meeting scared about, you know, scared about, you know, like getting that project. Like, I don't care if I don't get that project because we have some freedom, right? But when I started doing that, we ended up getting more projects and bigger projects, and clients didn't negotiate with us, and we ended up getting better projects. So when you're in that place where you're working out of desperation, you're gonna attract all the bad clients. You're gonna attract all that bad energy. But when you're actually working out of a good place, you know,
Stick to your plan.
you're automatically gonna attract the good clients.
Yeah, that kind of happened to me too, because there are many things I can do, and I felt like, okay, what I plan to do doesn't work right now, so I focused on other things, which made me little money, but I didn't have any energy left to actually do what I came here for. So yeah, so that happened too, and I had to realize it to stop it. So was this the point where you were having mostly like hospital clients or doctors, or
So like, so when we started working with some of the corporate clients, like hospitals, a lot of healthcare companies, pharmaceutical companies, that's when, because like when you work with corporate clients, when I work with the, let's say, a small business or a startup, they're literally spending their own money. So if they're paying, if they're paying us like $20,000 even, like they're going to make sure to get every dollar out of that, right? So that's why it's so hard to work with them. But when we work with American Red Cross, mm-hmm. like $200,000 is nothing to them. Mm-hmm. And I'm working with their marketing manager, who it's not her money. Mm-hmm. So the project becomes a lot easier. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I ask that for people who know you or your name or your agency now or who you did a website for. They might not know this part that you started mm-hmm. from there, having these clients, and then something happened because your clients have changed.
Yeah, it's a completely different kinds of clients.
Yeah.
And I actually tell this to a lot of freelancers. Like if you want to get to that next level, you're not going to get there with the same clients you're doing. Like you're not mm-hmm. going to get there with your restaurant clients or, you know, like your small business clients, because mm-hmm. it's a completely different mindset. Yeah.
So how did it happen that then like Gabby Bernstein came in? How did that happen?
Yeah. So that actually happened later on. So we were doing that for about mm-hmm. 5-6 years.
Okay.
Like those kind of type of clients. And by then we were pretty much, you know, we were pretty well known in New York mm-hmm. For websites, at least when it comes to like websites. And Gabby was at the point where her career was just starting to take off. Mm-hmm. And she was looking for, she had like a website that her intern built years ago, and it was like garbage. And she was ready to like take her brand to the next level, right? Mm-hmm. So she wanted to hire a legit agency. And we were the biggest investment that she's ever made at that point. Mm-hmm. and we actually did that project at a discounted rate. Mm-hmm. But we were still the biggest investment, right? And at that time, like I wasn't working with, I wasn't used to working with the stakeholders. Like when we started the startups, I was working with the stakeholders. Mm-hmm. But then now I was working in. See, the downside of working on these corporate brands is that because you're working with their marketing director, CMOs, who's at the end of the day, they're also 9-to-5 workers. They couldn't care less about the project. So they want to do everything safely. Mm. So we couldn't work on anything fun, innovative, creative, anything like that. We had to do very boring projects, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And then when I started working with Gabby, it was fun. And because she was actually involved, right? And she wanted to do, so we actually did something really creative. Mm-hmm. And after we launched that, it started getting all these, it started to get featured on all these blogs. Mm-hmm. There were like top 10 personal brand websites, and then there'll be like Oprah, Tony Robbins, and there'll be Gabby Bernstein, right?
Wow.
Yeah. And then like, there was a few cases like that. And then she would go to like these like book events mm-hmm. Where other authors would be like, oh, Gabby, I love your website. Like, who did your website? And I had such a good working relationship with Gabby. Like, I didn't know this until later, like a couple years later, but we started getting all these other personal brands, other authors and stuff like that. And one of them told me like, you know, like, did you know that like Gabby wouldn't stop talking about you? Like she was saying like how amazing you are. Like, that's why we hired you.
Aww.
So that's cool. The reason why I brought that up is, you know, we're so afraid of like, people saying bad things about us behind our back, but we don't realize that if you're actually doing good work and you treat people right, they also, like, if you treat people like shit, yes, they're gonna talk shit about you behind your back, but if you treat people well, they mm-hmm. also talk good about behind your back too. Mm-hmm. And that's actually how we got most of our clients, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, so and then like Jay Shetty came through there, like so on and so on and so on, right? Mm-hmm. And then Jay Shetty referred us to Mark Randolph. And so that's kind of like how we got into the personal branding space.
Were you aware that this would be a major shift maybe towards a more creative client?
No, not right away. It took us a couple of years. Okay. A couple of years of like after we've done like 4 or 5 of these projects, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is fun. Like number one, so one of the person that Gabby introduced me to was Baron Baptiste. who's like from Baptist Yoga, and I went to a Baptist like a retreat, and I just kind of like fell in love with it. And you know, when I actually met Gabby, I didn't know anything about personal development. I never heard of Eckhart Tolle. The only name I've ever heard of was Tony Robbins. I don't know what a life coach is, none of that, right? And then like working with Gabby and all these people kind of like got me into that world, and I found it fascinating. And then I went to the yoga retreat, and then like what I realized is like, oh, I think once we got this one client, his name's Michael Brody Wade, and he wrote a book called Great Leaders Live Like Drug Addicts. And he's like a TED talk speaker, and I'm like, why is this guy was like a Inc. 500 CEO? He sold his company and basically retired, and then he decided to write a book and do this. And then I saw signs like that everywhere. I'm like, why are all these people doing, like building a personal brand, starting YouTube channels? And I realized like that I kind of started seeing the trend where, okay, like, personal brand is like the future of all brands. And, you know, when you start seeing billionaires, people in finance start to jump on it, you can kind of like, that's the clue, right? Like when Ray Dalio wrote a book and Bob Iger, the chairman of CEO, right? Kevin O'Leary started a YouTube channel. So I started seeing all these signs. And I'm like, I have a feeling that personal branding is the future. So we decided to completely switch our direction of our brand, our agency niche, from healthcare to personal branding. And I actually decided to build my own personal brand, exactly. Although that took a few years before I actually executed it.
Yeah. Okay, so we have one major transformation. You finally made it out of the 9-to-5 thinking. You had your own agency, you were successful with it. You could have just continued like that. And I know that there will come another down.
Yeah, maybe I don't know if you call that
moment. When you did the online course and you realized, oh no, that's something is off. Yeah, take us there a bit. Yeah.
You mean when I did my Domestika course?
I wasn't sure if it was the Domestika
course. So I mean,
what it did to you? Yeah.
For me, I go through these ups and downs. Like, you know, I've gone through it many times, and I don't expect to ever be like this. I even in the future, I expect it to keep going up and down, because I think like I heard this. I heard this from somewhere. Like, they say that, I heard this from like a Y Combinator founder, that every startup they invested in, like when you look at it, there's this trend where all these entrepreneurs start with this delusional optimism. Like, oh, I'm going to change the world. And then they hit reality and they're like, okay, I don't know anything about this. Like, oh, I'm going to invent an electric car. And then it's like, oh my God, it's not working out, right? So, and then now they have to get humbled, and they have to start from the bottom and learn, right? And then it's going to happen again. And for me, I think that's kind of how it is, right? So when I started building my Instagram, I had very quick success, right? Within, I think, a matter of like 6 months, I got 50,000 followers. And I was like, oh wow. And then around that time, Domestika asked me to do a course. So I'm like, I'm gonna do a course. And then another 6 months have passed, and what happened was I went into this like hole. Like, I stopped posting for like a year actually at that time, because I was like, okay, this is what happened. I was working on my own course, and while I was working on my own course, I was like, oh, I know, I'm telling people that, oh, this is going to help you grow Instagram and, you know, all of that. But I, at that time, I have been kind of coaching people like here and there. And what I realized is that a lot of them can't grow Instagram just by me teaching them all those things. Because number one, their content still sucks. And number two, most of them are just not going to do it. Like, mm-hmm. even if I tell them to post every day, I tell them to use this hashtag, I tell them to shorten their copy, they're just not going to do it. That's just like, it's so weird with human nature is that, you know, only 1 out of 100 people that I give advice to actually listen to my advice. The other 99% people, they listen to it for 3 weeks and they stop. So, you know, at that time, so I didn't feel right. You know, I do sales pages and copywriting and things like that. So when I was writing my own copy, creating my own sales page, I mean, I've been doing it for years for clients and I didn't realize it until I did it for myself. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, this is going to help you grow Instagram. I'm like, but that's a lie. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, I mean, if they do it, it will. But I know that at the end of the day, at least like 80% of the people that buy this course is not going to grow Instagram.
I'm 80%. I bought the course. I think that's how I met you a year ago. And I loved it, but it was at the time too much to make use of the knowledge, you know? So I just, mm-hmm. yeah. But I followed you. That's why I'm still here. Instagram. Yeah.
No, I was actually talking about a different course. That the storytelling course was for Domestika.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I didn't, because in that storytelling course, I didn't promise people that they're going to grow Instagram. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? True. But I was actually going to make an Instagram course. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, and how these sales pages work is, I would write sales pages for my clients where like, oh, you know, you can have everything you want. Like kind of like the Tony Robbins type of sales page, right? You can have everything you want. You know, your mindset is the only thing that's stopping you, and I'm going to give you the key to unlock it. And like all this kind of, and if you buy right now in the next 24 mm-hmm. hours, you know, you're going to like those type of things. Mm-hmm. So when I was writing my own sales page, and I was going to actually sell a high ticket course that was like $1,000 or $1,500. Mm-hmm. I was like, this doesn't feel right. Wow. And then I went into like this dilemma mm-hmm. of like, I actually had like a whole kind of existential crisis because in my head, I was thinking like, wait, is this what I've been doing? Mm-hmm. Is my entire life a lie? Because I basically spent my entire career manipulating people to buy things that they don't need, mm-hmm. right? And so I kind of stopped making content for like a year. And I was like, I felt like this fraud.
Wow.
For a year, I kind of went into a hole. And I was talking to my sister and my mom is professors. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to them a lot about this, like education and things like that. And that's when I decided, like a year later, that's when I decided I'm going to start a membership. Because at the end of the day, without the practice, you know how like at Night Owl Nation, all I talk about, I constantly talk about practice. And I was like, without practice, it doesn't work. And the reason why I decided to make it $5 is because like at the end of the day, I want to be completely open and honest with my my audience, right? Like if I'm selling a book, like see, if I'm charging $5 mm-hmm. for something where you can come practice, you might not practice, I don't know, then I don't feel guilty. I'm just being upfront, right? Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, I feel like I feel the need to coach every single person mm-hmm. to make sure they do it. And like, it's not scalable.
Yeah. Right.
So I did that for like and then that's how Night Owl Nation was born.
Yeah, it was the $5 that made me buy it. And now mm-hmm. do the exact opposite of what you did before, as you framed it, like your job was to manipulate people to buy mm-hmm. very expensive courses or whatever. And I was wondering, like I knew from your Instagram that you know this stuff. So I was like, why is he offering it for $5? I don't even know what mm-hmm. he's offering. Not because you didn't say it, but because I didn't get it. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand why I would need it. So I was like, yeah, you know what, $5, let me just look at it. And then you were like a whole world opened up with a very, very nice and a community where I feel safe, which is not easy to do. I know that. And also, yeah, you made it very clear you need to practice for this to work. And I had a very steep learning curve in which was the opposite to the course. I took the course, I understood many things, I learned many things, I told many things about it, but I didn't use it because it was too, I'm lazy like that, you know. I yeah, but what really gets me if like you give me homework, and then we get to share it and I get feedback and things, then that works for me. So what happened is as soon as I looked at the product and started it, I understood, oh wow, I need this. I need this. First, I was like, storytelling, it's not for me because I can't do it. But now I understood, oh yeah, that's why we're learning it, because yeah, everybody should learn
Now
it.
I'm trying to get it to a point where everything you experienced, like it takes people so long to get there. So now I'm trying to figure out like how to shorten that cycle. So I don't like Night Owl Nation to me is a is a lifelong project. It's not something that I'm like, okay, I'm gonna build this and a year later it's done and I'm gonna be rich. That's not what I'm thinking. It's because I have a feeling that there's a lot of things I still need to figure out. And there's a lot of things that I think once I figure it out, you know, a lot of other people can use the same thing. Meaning, if I can figure out how to make education so fun and so like clear to the student that why I should be practicing it. And like if I can figure out this thing, I feel like a lot of other educators can take the same model and use it, right? Because right now, as much as like education is so popular right now, it's not working. Like the whole
Absolutely.
K through 12 university, like the traditional education doesn't work because the only reason why people do it is because they're forced to for their grade and for their diploma. So that's why by the time they graduate, they didn't actually learn it. They learned how to memorize. That's all they learned, right? They learned how to take tests. And then these other private institution, like private education, like where, you know, the like, oh, you know, learn how to make a seven figure online or those kind of courses don't work because, yeah, they're voluntarily buying it, but after they buy it, they don't actually put in the work, right?
Exactly.
So in either case, it's not working. So something needs to be fixed, and I just don't know what the answer is
I
yet.
realized the same things. I have mastermind where we figured, because we were all of us were building online products, online courses, and we realized even we ourselves, we were buying courses and not finishing them. And we realized it like looking at the people who bought our courses, they're not finishing them. So we were trying to figure out how can we make this work? How can we put gamification in it? Or and we came to the conclusion it has to be a mix between maybe something like a course and something where members can meet, because that's the only thing that is different from YouTube, that you have actual people that you're talking to.
I
So
mean, maybe with AI something will happen, but like AI is still early, right? So who knows?
who knows? Who knows? Who knows? Okay, so we've come to today, and yeah, maybe we should not look at it or don't need to look at it as an up and down. Maybe it's a spiral because you're always learning things that will make grow more. You know, I think each
I
phase.
also think that most people that I know are either have never even experienced this once or only like once or twice in their whole
And then
life,
gave up.
right? So what ends up happening is every time they're in that downturn, they pretty much give up, right? Because they're so used to safety. I feel like this modern society has made us so comfortable with safety that we can't handle anything else, right? So, but then for me, I've gone through this ups and down like half a dozen times now that even when I'm going through it now, I don't feel it. It's almost like it's okay, it's natural. This is just part of life
It is.
now.
I understood now that it is, but for me, it was my chronic disease. We spoke about it on your podcast, that made me realize nothing is safe. I felt super safe one day before I got diagnosed, you know, nothing is safe, you know? So, and I keep telling people that, but they don't, if you don't experience that, then if you don't expose yourself to this, and that there's always an after. Yeah, there might be an unsafe situation or a situation where things kind of crumble.
I actually think that it's by design. Like, I think the modern society is designed that way to, because think about it, right? Like, when I was young, when I was in Korea, it's common that people lose jobs and they're screwed. And, you know, like, things happen, like, shit happens in life. But when I moved to America, I found it fascinating. This was like in the early 90s. Like, people get people lose their jobs and they still get paid. Like, because we have unemployment insurance. There's like, and I was also like, oh, and companies can't just fire you. And like, you know, like, our system is, and then the government gives you money. Like, the system is so designed to keep you so safe. That, and I think that it's on purpose, because it's in that safety you start to depend on others. You start to depend on the government. You start to depend on the corporations, right?
And you're predictable. Your life becomes predictable. Yeah.
And I think, like, we need to really get out of that mindset where I need 100%. Like, right now, almost everyone that I talk to, they don't know how to manage that risk, right? Because like you said, tomorrow you can have some sort of an illness. Tomorrow you can walk outside of your house and get hit by a car and never walk again. And it's just, life is unpredictable, right?
Yeah.
And we know that if every time, you know, you drive a car, there's a chance you can get into an accident, right? So, but for some reason, we don't understand that risk. We don't believe that that's going to happen to us.
I didn't.
And therefore, when you start a business, it's a risk, right? Like, this is what I think. I tell people, starting a business is like, okay, you right now, let's say you're making $100,000 guaranteed in your job. If you start a business, there's an 80% chance that you can make $1 million. But there's 20% chance that you can make $0. Okay? And people won't take that chance. It's like, I'd rather have a guaranteed $100,000 a year than 80% chance of making $1 million a year if I have a 20% chance of making zero, right? And that math just doesn't work, right? Like, because if you run that over 10 years, you're definitely better off taking the 80% chance, right?
Yeah.
But people don't think that way. Everybody wants 100% guarantee. So, and it's also what holds them back.
Yeah, exactly. So in hindsight, what would you say were the qualities that you have, or maybe the thoughts, or maybe the mentors, maybe the people around you that made you decide to take that risk and not give up after the first low?
You know, like, okay, I'm going to talk about my bad traits first. My lowest quality is my ego. So throughout this whole process, I think I've learned that I need to keep my ego in check. I need to keep my ego under control. And I'm more and more convinced of that. Like, you know, when I meet people that are in business, there's a direct correlation between how successful they are and how humble they are. The more successful somebody is, the more humble they are. The less successful somebody is, the more ego they have. Like, all the poor people that I know, all the unsuccessful people that I know, all the unhappiest people I know, think that they know everything. Think that they're right about everything. Think that they're so smart. When I talk to billionaires, CEOs, all these successful entrepreneurs, they're always like, so when I work with a startup entrepreneur who's like struggling, they're like, no, son, we have to do it this way. Like, they're like not taking my advice, or, you know, they think they know everything. When I talk to a billionaire client, they're like, oh, son, like, yeah, give me some advice. What should I do? And they're asking me for advice. So it's kind of weird, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I 100% believe that ego is the biggest thing. Like, and I think the moment when I realized this is when Baron Baptiste, who's the yoga person that I was telling you about, like I was working with them and he was like, oh son, like what should we do? Oh, and I was telling him about, oh, we should do this and we should do content strategy like this and we should have a page that converts like this. And I was kind of telling him about how we should do the marketing. He's like, oh wow, that's so interesting. Yeah, you're so right. And you know, and then a year later I found out that he already knew all of that stuff because years ago he already worked with another fellow person who's already like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's just that he wanted to, you know, like he was being humble in front of me. Do you understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that was mind blowing for me, right? Because I would have been like, I already know that, son. Like, what do you think? You know what I mean?
Yeah. What else comes to mind is the pricing you choose. You could have said, I'm a successful, like I have an agency and I charge a lot. I'm not dealing with $5 things. Mm-hmm. You could have said that. Your ego could have said that.
Yeah.
That's where how you started and over way over delivered. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the thing I learned.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I had was I guess I really don't care about money.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah.
But I think that was helpful because I was never once afraid of being homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually been there a couple of times, like where not homeless, but like when I was like 21, I was living in this basement apartment paying like $300 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't even afford to pay that.
Mm.
So I was 3 months late in rent. And I couldn't pay that 3 months rent. So I packed up everything and I snuck out of that place like in the middle of the night to go sleep in my friend's couch. And then like a few months later, I ended up sending him a check for the rent I didn't pay.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I was in that place like a few times that I'm just never scared of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is bold the word? Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'm like, maybe delusional. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Is that I'm not afraid to take those kind of risks. I guess because I don't care about money.
Yeah. Yeah. And I keep telling people that you might call me deranged or whatever, just delusional or whatever, or bold. But at least, even if I end up failing, I've enjoyed all the time trying.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much to let us look into your little roller coasters or spirals or whatever. And I learned a lot today from this. Yeah. Again. So thank you very much, son, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Grateful to be here.
Yeah. And I'll see you soon. I know I will.
Thanks, Anna.
On Sunday. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.